say, I'm so happy it's the first day of summer. The sun is shining across a big swath of the province. It's shining in Saskatoon. It's shining in Regina. I got into my car this morning feeling so energized. I love it. And I got to say, I love every season in Saskatchewan, truly. Truly. I love the sunshine in the winter, even when it's bitterly cold. I love the fall. I love the spring. I love the summer. But as a parent of three young children, I really love the summer because we can send the kids out in flip-flops, shorts, shirts, no toques, no mitts, no boots, no snow pants, no mitts to dry out at the end of the day. I'm just very happy it's the start of summer. But first, before we get into the rest of the summer, Frank, it's time for the Big Talker.
Let's get down to business, shall we?
Welcome.
Let's begin.
The Evan Bray Show. The Big Talker.
Well, if you did not hear my conversation yesterday with George Takash, I encourage you to head to our website after this show and check it out. George is a Canadian scholar, lawyer, author of a new book called Cold War 2.0. And as it so happened, at around the same time that George was telling me about how we are now in the second Cold War, thanks in good part, he argues, to our apathy when it came to Russia's last invasion of Ukraine in 2014, and our apathy as China became increasingly aggressive in the South China Sea. It was around the time of this conversation yesterday on this show that NATO's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg was addressing a room full of supporters at the NATO Association of Canada in Ottawa. And he talked about a lot of things. He talked about China.
But the reality is that China is fueling the largest armed conflict in Europe since World War II. And at the same time, it wants to maintain good relations with the West.
And there must be consequences, Stoltenberg said. And he talked about North Korea, where leader Kim Jong-un rolled out the red carpet for Russian President Vladimir Putin yesterday. Putin, who, until recently, had at least tried, so it seemed, to give the appearance of keeping an arm's length distance from North Korea. And we're now learning that the two autocratic regimes have signed a pledge to support each other against so-called aggression, whatever that might look like for them. And Jens Stoltenberg also talked in Ottawa yesterday about, of course, Canada. Our national defense spending now sits at 1.37% of our GDP, according to NATO, a far cry from the minimum 2% we promised to invest, along with all the other NATO allies, which, of course, begs the question. And Stoltenberg got a few questions like this from reporters in Ottawa yesterday. Is our failure to commit that 2% hurting our reputation among allies?
NATO's standing Canada's standing in NATO is strong. But at the same time, of course, we expect all allies to make good on the promise of investing 2%.
And Canada's challenges in meeting that minimum 2% are the same challenges faced by other NATO allied countries. We've all got budgets. We've all got bills to pay, priorities, healthcare, climate change, education.
But again, if we're not able to prevent war, if we're not able to preserve peace, then what to do on health and climate change and education, anyway, it will fail.
It will fail. Well, that author I spoke with yesterday, George Takash, made the argument that every Canadian should be grilling their local MPs on military spending, that this should be a top election issue for all federal parties, with the backdrop of NATO Secretary General's trip to Ottawa yesterday and Russia's trip to North Korea. Does my next guest feel the same? Time to find out. Colleen Bell is an international relations scholar at the University of Saskatchewan and author of The Freedom of Security, Governing Canada in the Age of Counterterrorism. Colleen Bell, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Great to be here.
I just want to start out, if I can, by getting your reaction to the many goings-on of yesterday. First, Vladimir Putin's trip to North Korea. What did that signal to you?
Well, I think, you know, there actually have been some deepening relations between Russia and North Korea for some time. So in some ways, you know, despite, you know, them signing this new agreement, I mean, it's not really all new. And I think, you know, yesterday's performance was a performance, mm-hmm. right, to kind of turn heads. And so I think it was very effective in that respect. I think like a number of countries, particularly in Asia, like Japan and South Korea, are very concerned because they believe that this is maybe a bit of a signal that we're heading toward sort of Cold War-esque politics again and possibly, you know, some kind of World War III.
Right. Okay, so that brings us to Canada and what we should or are or shouldn't be doing to potentially prepare ourselves for this. And you just mentioned, you know, potentially towards another Cold War. George Takacs was arguing yesterday that we've been there since 2014. The UN Secretary General was, I think, being quite diplomatic with his comments on Canada yesterday, perhaps given that he was about to meet privately with the Prime Minister. But the fact remains that a record 23 out of 32 NATO countries are now hitting the 2% defense spending target, and Canada is not. In fact, we are among the lowest spenders. Do you think, Colleen Bell, that this is hurting our reputation among NATO allies?
Well, I think, you know, it may be. I mean, I don't have a particular measure of that. I think, like, it, you know, on the one hand, I think that, you know, Stoltenberg's objectives were to continue to apply pressure, continue to sort of raise the issue. But I think he's also aware of the actual context, which is that over the last decade, Canada has actually doubled its defense spending. Mm-hmm. And so even while it falls below the 2%, we haven't been in a situation where it's been in decline, and in fact has been increasing. I think the other important point here is that, you know, this is sort of a process, and maybe Canada's sort of slow on the uptake a little bit, but Canada did release a defense policy which had not existed. We hadn't had a defense policy in a long time in 2019 called Strong, Secure, and Engaged. Anybody can go and read it themselves. And then a follow-up to that that came out in April of this year that is entitled, like, Our North Strong and Free Plan, a vision for defense in Canada. And that plan promises, you know, over $8 billion in more defense spending over the next 5 years. And so Stoltenberg is aware that there is actually a plan to continue to build.
But is it a plan to get to 2%?
Well, that's a good question. I still think it might fall a bit short of 2%. You know, Canada is sort of resting a little bit on some of its other contributions to Ukraine, to Latvia, mm-hmm. operations and so forth that mean that Canada has continued to play a very active and supportive role in NATO. And, you know, I don't think anybody here is looking to strain the relationship to a point where those kinds of cooperative activities don't continue into the future. So, you know, I think Stoltenberg is being fairly strategic here, but I think he's also aware of the actual context, which is that we're not in a situation of decline, but actually mm-hmm. increase. And that's been consistent for the last 10 years. And then I guess I would also add that, you know, recruitment is a difficult thing in Canada.
Yes. We're something like, 15,000 military members short, something like that?
Yeah, like it's a process. And I mean, Strong, Secure, Engaged, the defense policy does put a lot of emphasis on how to recruit people, but it's, you know, it is difficult. And the other thing I would say is that procurement is a very slow process. I mean, we don't want it to be a quick, easy process in the sense of, you know, hopping over to the shop and picking up some milk and bread. Like, you know, it is a slow process that has many layers to it. And in order to make it happen, that requires significant civil service staffing. And that, I think, is another area that is somewhat problematic for Canada in terms of increasing procurement of new weapons, which is one of the things that, you know, NATO wants to see, which is, you know, this sort of 20% of the defense budget spent on new equipment.
If you're just joining us, just in case anyone's just popping in, Colleen, you're listening to Colleen Bell, who is an international relations scholar at the University of Saskatchewan. And Colleen, what you just, you painted a little, an interesting little picture there. If we don't want recruitment to be happening just lickety-split, people run out to the grocery store and suddenly they're enlisted in the military. But that is what we have seen. I know this is a very different situation, but play out in Ukraine. When we think about when Russia invaded Ukraine and suddenly the government has people handing out rifles in the streets to anybody who wants one to defend their country. So I feel like should there not be more urgency, though, given that, you know, we've got China and Russia with their submarines lurking beneath our Arctic waters. Do we have enough urgency in this country, do you think? As you mentioned, those two plans, but not a clear plan to get to the 2%. Are we lacking in that urgency?
Well, I guess, like, I think that the 2% is a number that can mean a lot of different things in practice. So, yes, the 2% is what NATO wants. Does it mean that Canada isn't meaningfully contributing? I would say no. Does it mean that if we get to 2%, suddenly we can all rest and just be happy with that? That may not be the case either, right? So the 2% is a number that has been arrived at through some kind of metric that is relatively opaque. And so, I'm not inclined to, you know, come down clearly one way or the other. And I also think,
Radio, Colleen. We need strong opinions.
I know, but I think
I'm joking.
Here's an opinion, or maybe not an opinion, but I think a number that people might want to think about is that Canada is a part of NATO, which is accounts for over half of the global military spending that exists in the world. And right now, military spending is, you know, $2,443 billion, and NATO accounts for half of that. So, I mean, you know, there is
the same argument could be made for climate change then. You know, we're all part of this climate change plan, but we contribute very little. So people here think we don't really need to do anything about climate change. But I want to ask you, Colleen, before I have to let you go in the next minute or so, about, you know, these parliamentarians who we've been hearing. There's this report, and people who have read this unredacted report say that there are people potentially working on Parliament Hill right now who are essentially acting as foreign agents for powers like China and India. We don't know who these parliamentarians are, and that gives me very little faith that any of our federal parties can deal with the unsettling geopolitical landscape, that we're dealing with today. Do you think, in your opinion, should we have the names of those parliamentarians who are alleged to be, you know, as I said, apparently acting as foreign agents for these different autocratic governments?
So the answer is yes, I do think so. But I also think there needs to be a proper process in order to make that happen, right? In our country, we have rule of law, we have due process, we have a process through which these kinds of revelations can be revealed that protect the fact that everybody gets an opportunity to provide defense, their own, you know, to defend themselves and to respond to allegations. And so there has to be a process for that. And I think some of the NSI COP recommendations, I think some of the recommendations that'll come out of the public inquiry being led by Justice Hogue, I think those will help to provide some clarity about what should be done and how to go about it. But I also think that it's really important to note that, you know, one of the really negative aspects of this whole issue is that it casts suspicion over all parliamentarians.
Yes.
And that is unfortunate, because what we also know is that most parliamentarians have not behaved unethically, let alone illegally.
Yes.
And I think the other point that's been missed here is that all levels of government are affected by this issue. Universities are affected, boardrooms, NGOs, it is beyond government. This isn't The report that was released was never simply about MPs, and it, for some reason, has become almost solely about MPs. And I think that's a bit unfortunate, because it provides a false impression about what the findings actually are. And so, yes, I agree with you that, you know, obviously there needs to be a way in which we know who these people are and we can take action. And we also can maybe differentiate between the witting and the unwitting.
Colleen Bell, I'm afraid I have to end it there, just because we're coming up against the news pretty soon. But I so appreciate this conversation. I hope to continue it. Colleen Bell, of course, is an international relations scholar at the University of Saskatchewan, author of The Freedom of Security, Governing Canada in the age of counterterrorism. Thank you very much for your time today, Colleen.
Thanks, Tamara.
I'm Tamara Cherry in for Evan Bray on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.